Welcome to Wellington Inkslingers.
Hello! Welcome to the third ever episode of Wellington Inkslingers. I am your host for today, Angela Wells, and with us today are...
Woodrow Szadlo,
Sarah Nelson,
and Catherine Haynes.
Cool. So you might recognize Sarah and Catherine from previous episodes. Woodrow is joining us anew.
All new.
All the time.
All new content, all new delivery systems.
And our current topic for today is, well, it's the theme of the whole month for most of us, is National Novel Writing Month, a.k.a. NaNoWriMo. Would someone like to describe briefly for those just joining us who maybe are like, well, what is this? What's NaNoWriMo? Sarah?
NaNoWriMo is a challenge you set yourself to write a first draft of a novel or 50,000 words in 1 month. So that's 1,667 minimum words a day.
Awesome. Yes, and so we've all done NaNo before, and this month I'm opting out due to other reasons. We've got Woodrow and Sarah currently working on it, and Catherine, you've recently just...
I'm rebelling!
Just recently rebelled from doing it. So, let's start with a... Let's take a flashback then, quickly, and everyone discuss... How did it feel the first time you did NaNo or finished NaNo, Woody?
Alright, I've done NaNoWriMo for... This is my third year, and the first year I finished the... first draft of the current project, and the second year I started the second draft of the current project, and this year I'm doing the final draft of the current project, which, as Sarah said, we're supposed to be doing the first drafts, but this time I've decided to use this as a really good prompt to really just get the story finished in the way that I want it to be. And the first time I finished it, it just felt like I could legitimately call myself a writer. I know that you can legitimately call yourself a writer for, you know, anything, but for me, taking on that identity for myself required a level of kind of a costly symbol, like actually finishing something. The novel ended up being 102,000 words long, and just getting it printed off and actually being able to look through it and realize, holy shit, this is terrible, but there are some really good parts in it. It's a really good feeling.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I would recommend anyone who is listening in on this and hasn't done NaNo, isn't doing NaNo, give it a shot. It's not that difficult to get through the old 1667 per day. It's
what?
I can. We'll chat about strategy later. Sarah?
Well, I've done NaNo 4 years. This is my fourth. I've only technically won it once, which, unlike Woody, it wasn't a huge accomplishment for me because 2 months prior to that, I'd finished my first ever novel, so it was just really spinning out another first draft. It was a very productive year for me. It was really fun, and it was the first novel that I really loved, the one that I just recently shelved. I managed to write 120,000 words for it, all within November, which is why NaNo for me isn't about so much getting the 50,000 word challenge as it is about finishing the first draft of a novel. So hopefully I'll win again this year.
Cool. Okay. Catherine.
This is my fifth NaNoWriMo. I won for the very first time last year. So that was a neat thing to do once, but I'm a realist and I know that it's not going to be an every year thing for me. So my goal originally last year was just to beat the 25,000 word mark, which is where I had failed every other time before. I got to 30, hooray! Woo. I got to 40, hooray! 45, I can actually do this! And I mean, I had to get that 50,000 word mark, I had to skip ahead to the next most exciting scene, which was bloody and violent and...
like all the best scenes are.
Awkward to read out at a cafe because it was the only scene I actually had on me when we were doing the after party. But, so that was a victory in itself. Not as great a feeling as it was to actually have finished a novel as I had done previously, but it was still one thing off my writerly bucket list to do NaNo and actually prove that I can write quite a bit a day. I promptly fell out of those habits and tried to do it again with NaNoWriMo this year. Mm-hmm. So.
Cool. Yeah, the first time I actually did NaNoWriMo was actually the first time I participated ever. That was about 2 years ago. My husband worked on NaNoWriMo a few times previously. That was his fifth time doing it. He always identified more strongly as a writer than I did. I've always considered myself more of a visual artist, but I used to write a lot as a little kid. What I realized in retrospect was a lot of fanfic, actually. like Black Stallion book fanfic. I don't know, like, did you read those books? The Black Stallion, all those things? Yeah, a lot of it was that. I was a big horse nerd, you know, like a lot of little girls are. So I didn't really write much as I got older. I think I was frustrated by... I had some really good, encouraging teachers in middle school, high school, but then, like, I ran into one who was just so... Oh, she was so bent on people finishing their essays following this particular method. It was called the keyhole method. Has anyone ever heard of that?
Can you describe it slightly for us?
Yeah. It was just, like, it was meant to... The diagram, like, described, like, it was supposed to... Like, it was just, the diagram described sort of a keyhole, more of like a fat hourglass shape. I don't even know. Did you hear of it in the States?
No, I didn't actually get to the point in my schooling where we were really writing essays in the U.S. before I moved to New Zealand, where all of a sudden we were expected to have been writing essays for the last couple of few years. So that was an exciting time. But anyway, the keyhole method,
anyway, it was something that the teacher claimed, like, everyone used, and she claimed it was, like, the national standard, and yet, like... It seems like this only one school in New York happened, so she was... Anytime I turned an essay that I felt was good but didn't live up to her standards, these little keyhole method standards, marked down. It just totally broke my confidence, and I still wrote a little bit in university, I didn't really get over it until, I guess, I finally did NaNoWriMo because I had an idea that kind of thought, oh, this might be interesting to, like, write all the way through. Oh, God, 50,000 words does sound pretty daunting, but breaking it down into the easier chunks of just the 1,667 a day... I managed to make it, and Aaron was really impressed. She's like, this is your first NaNoWriMo, and you completed it. Yeah, and that manuscript's kind of, like, sitting around, like, still needing editing. But it was pretty amazing when I, like, realized that I'd written something made of words, and that was novel length. And not the few people who beta read for me, it's like, it's actually not bad. It's actually pretty good for a first draft, you know? You could polish it up and turn it into something publishable, which I still might do, but just making that accomplishment, I can see the sense of accomplishment you can get from, if you found it hard to make the word count before, because I know in university when I had to write, like, you know, huge freaking essays, like when I had to do my senior thesis, it came out 18 pages and I stayed up for 3 days, 2 nights. But my professor actually told me, like, wrote a comment on it saying, this is magnificent. So, woo, validation. No sleep and all validation. So, it was pretty awesome, I thought. And second of all, so strategies for those who are currently working on NaNoWriMo then. What techniques or methods do you recommend for someone struggling to make their word count? Catherine, you can start, maybe, even though you feel like, because everyone gestured towards you. because you've done it in the past. I mean, you're not doing it this time, but what has worked in the past?
I'm still trying to figure out my place in the NaNoWriMo world this month.
Uh-huh.
I'm often more in it for the companionship rather than the actual 50,000 words. So, that's the other great thing about NaNoWriMo. You are not alone. Everyone else in your writing group is actually writing as well. So, hooray for that.
Which is always exciting in Inkslingers, because...
We don't.
11 months out of the year, it's just hanging out.
A bunch of nerds occasionally discussing the art of character creation.
And the rest of the time, it's Marvel Comics and lesbian dolphins and all sorts of stuff.
In joke there, lesbian dolphins.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so... Having people there to help you going, yeah, look, you did it, is fantastic. And having people to, you know, keep going, it's like, man, I've only got 100 more words to go. It's like, you can do it. That's often one of the biggest things. Someone to actually go, you need to go sit down and do your words. Because some people, just like me, need someone to actually put them in a room and take away the internet and say, start writing.
Twitter is really great for that as well, if you're on Twitter, because, you know...
It's the opposite for me.
Really? Because I find, like, having word sprints and stuff like that with the people that I follow there who are also doing NaNo is really helpful.
Yeah, because I follow too many people on Twitter, so they're always like, and somebody's put up this article, oh, I better read it before it flies down my Twitter feed.
Oh, yeah.
So, my techniques are pretty simple. Contractions are bad. Well, it's two words.
It's two words.
Roman naming conventions are good.
What's that? Roman naming conventions?
Yeah, yes, like three names.
Oh, the Appius, Livius, Olivianus, whatever. Yeah.
Aulus, Coelius, Maximus, and his four sons.
Well done.
So still referring to people as, you know, grandmother so-and-so or aunt so-and-so. Cause that's the really desperate motivation. So I find I tend to do that when I'm really struggling and I'm not connecting with the work, because you're like, I need to get this out. And rather than actually enjoying the work, you are just adding on extra words, which isn't exactly the point, because you'll just have to chop those out and you'll end up with a 40,000 word draft or a... Well, maybe not 40,000 word draft, but there's still a big chunk that you could have actually got to. So that's more of a not a tip rather than a don't. But don't worry if you have done that, because you're still getting the words out. Once you have words out, you can edit them. You can't edit a story that is only in your head.
That's the main, I think the main thing to keep in mind if you're attempting this, is that this isn't, the words that you're putting down are never going to be the finished ones. You are going to go through every sentence and fix it, and you can have a sentence that isn't fixed.
Yeah,
but it's so painful to look at. Like, I keep writing in all these adverbs, and she was doing this, and I'm just...
Yeah. Or my one just has a whole lot of brackets, because, you know, don't delete, because you have written those words. Mm-hmm. But then you have the same sentence phrased three times, because you're like, I can fix this. But
the
it's going to it's a first draft at best. But once you have that draft out, then you can go, this works, I need to add a character in here, this person should die a whole lot sooner.
Didn't he have a friend who was in the last four scenes with him? Did I just forget about him entirely?
These two characters should totally hook up, because sometimes they just start interacting on page and you're like, there is a subplot in here. And that's what you can explore in your next draft and your next outlines.
Subplots are a great way, if they possess you during the novel, during the writing of it, you can go on so many tangents during your first draft.
You know you've done something.
I don't recommend it, but it's a good way to get word count.
Tangents are really useful. I found one trick that really helped me was dialogue is great, but also going into kind of an authorial monologue on certain issues can be very useful. Like,
really?
In my story, silver is very important, and I needed to explain that in some way beyond kind of just having it understood. It's being demonstrated all over the place, but I felt the need to really just state it from the outset that this is the rules of my world, these are how they work.
Yeah.
And I found I tried a couple of approaches, you know, like, just continually reinforcing it, continually restating it, but I found the best way was just to kind of say, silver is a very important metal. And then kind of going on for about a fairly long paragraph to explain, you know, why and how it was figured out, and then all that sort of stuff. Just put that chunk in there. Just actually, just explain things. It's okay.
Sometimes you have to actually say why something is happening, especially if this person is a new thing. It's like, what is our role in the universe to this grand new power or place that you've discovered?
If there's new rules to explain, you can get away with not explaining them for a long time, and actually the big rules you probably don't want to explain, you can kind of leave those shadowy and murky. But little things like that people know about in the story, probably worth actually telling the reader as well, so that they can follow along with it.
And even if you have to feed it in more slowly in the second draft, having it all out there in a big chunk, it's really useful. I'm currently doing something really similar in that I'm writing a murder mystery and I'm going through the interviewing the suspects thing at the moment. And so after every interview, I'm recapping what happened in that interview. It's actually something that this is kind of done in a few Agatha Christie books anyway, so it's not something that you never see in published novels, but it's definitely something that keeps things straight for me, and that I can fiddle with later.
My dad's actually been reading through The Luminaries at the moment, which is that 800-page story. And he was explaining to me that she does a couple of really cool tricks. One of them is she actually tells the reader about scene changes and new character viewpoints directly. She actually says, "Now for the next few scenes, we're going to look at it through the eyes of this character, and here's why."
Huh.
Yeah, kind of just actually going. There's this weird thing with novels. You kind of hope that the reader follows you when you scene change. But if you just tell them what you're doing, kind of, you know, lift the curtain a little bit and say, and here's a bit of the machine, here's the cog that we're turning, and then go right on with the story, you can kind of bring them along.
It depends on novel and genre, adventure novel, that's not going to work for as often.
But it depends on your voice, really. It depends on the...
Take my hand, come have a look at it from this angle.
But the other trick that she pulled, according to my dad, who's actually read the damn thing, is that she's got about 150 pages of fairly dense, complex exposition, and at the end of that, you're kind of starting to lose the track a little bit. And then she brings in an audience viewpoint character to whom it is summarized in 2 pages. And just actually kind of, like, you know, just... It's very much a case of, okay... you're probably not quite following at this point, so let me just restate, and of course at that point the audience is like, thank you, author.
Yeah, it'll be
actually really helpful.
From what you're saying, is a really strong authorial voice rather than what a lot of us write here. I know I'm one of them who try to write with strong character voices. Pratchett has a really strong author voice, I think, whereas Rowling has more of a character voice.
For strong character voices and author voices, never mind. That's a tangent that I didn't have anything to say about.
Any strategies you want to go on with?
Strategies. The other big kind of getting the words out there strategy is never write off a day, is the big one that I found. Just last night, I was 1,000 words behind word count, and I was ready to write it off. It was 11 o'clock at night. What the hell was I going to get done in that time? And then I started writing, and I kind of kept writing, and then I worked up to the point where I was actually ahead of word count. And if you write off the day, it's very easy to kind of keep it written off, to just say, okay, I'm done writing today. I can't make it in that time. But if you don't, you can kind of poke at it, and 50 words by 20 words by 30 words, you can fill in the last few hundred words of your day quite easily by accident.
Yes. That exact same happened to me. I was like, it's 12:45. I'm like, okay, I better go to bed, check my workout. Oops, I'm at 1,663 words. I better fix this. Okay, well, I'll just write a sentence. And 250 words later, it was, you know, 5 minutes later, 250 words, 250 words later, that was a whole chunk of padding that I didn't have before, just because, well, I can just write another sentence, and that led on to another thing. The other piece of advice is, you can write anywhere. I wrote most of my last nano on the bus.
Wow.
Because I was traveling 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and so I wrote a lot of it on my phone.
Oh, wow. That is clever.
I get carsick reading on my phone, so I can't write it.
I mean, even when my hands were getting quite sore, I could adjust the way I was sitting and the way my hands were being held by going off and just sitting in another room in the house and writing another 300, 500, 700,000 words on my phone.
That's good advice for a lot of people, but there are other people, myself being one of them. I need a routine. I need a specific place where I can write. I never used to be like that, but... because I'm recovering from some mental illness things, I need to be able to tell myself, I'm going here for 5 hours, and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write for that time, and then I'm going to go home and I'm going to relax, and I'm not going to think about it. Because if I don't do that, it's very easy for the novel to take over my life. It's the same reason that I'm actually making myself take Wednesdays off every day throughout November. Oh. I'm still planning to get my word count. I just have to do higher word counts all the other days, because... it's about knowing your limits and knowing yourself. And if you think that you're not going to get the words, if you're not writing on the bus or you're bored on the bus and you've got the time to do it, that's really awesome. That's a great way for you to do it.
Mm.
If you think that you need a little more pressure on yourself and a little more routine for whatever reasons, that's another strategy to do it.
Mm. I could only do the bus thing is because 3 hours out of my day was lost to travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's a routine in itself, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, because on the bus here, waiting for the bus, on the bus there, and then I just rode in lunch times while I was at school.
I'm kind of getting the real sense is that the main thing is know how you like to write, almost. Like, try a few things. If something isn't working, change it. If it does work, remember that, but try other things as well.
Yeah.
Just really, really figure out how you like to write, and don't take someone else's advice just because they've done it before or haven't done it before. Or,
don't limit yourself, but also limit yourself if that's what you need.
Mm.
That brings up an interesting. I'm gonna off the cuff throw this out. A bit of blue skying, I guess. What would each of your ideal writing lifestyle setups be? Start with you, Lily.
Ideal writing lifestyle setup.
You can assume if money were no object if you want, or within your own means. That's up to you.
Well, I find that a lot of my good writing comes either from kind of a competitive thing like word sprinting. Mm-hmm. That can be just excellent because it taps into some that selfish node buried deep inside every human heart that says, I'm going to be better than that person. I'm going to be better. But apart from that, I find that I suppose I have enough kind of guilt in me that if I just know that it's there and I haven't quite hit my quota for the day, I will eventually get to it. You know, I'll poke at it from time to time, but it's sort of a case of I just need to know that it's there, and I'll handle it in due time, I suppose. When not necessarily when the inspiration strikes, so much as when I look at it and I sigh too hard.
Yeah.
What about you, Sarah?
My ideal writing life? I've pretty much, in terms of my writing, my life is pretty good. I do manage to get myself out of the house. I usually grab a couple of coffees at a cafe and work for a number of hours because that gets me out of the house, which is really important for my recovery at the moment. And there's no Wi-Fi at the cafe I go to, so there's no distractions.
That right there, that's the trick.
Yeah, and that's really fun. I usually spend a few hours doing that, and I don't think I would do things any different if I had the chance. Not writing-wise, anyway.
No. What about you, Catherine?
I would have a different room in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Because my computer, as everything, is in my bedroom.
Ah.
And it faces west. It gets really, really warm in my room.
Oh. Okay.
So usually in the afternoon I have to go find another room in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have heat and photosensitive issues with my body and my skin. So it's not the most comfortable environments, especially with a computer running.
Right.
So a room where the temperature will be more controlled. There would also be no internet. I could play my music as loud as I wanted. Because I am just one of those people who needs noise.
Mm. I'm the same, yeah.
I'm the opposite. I can't write if I have something to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah, I need a kind of unstructured kind of like music to write or paint to or anything.
And
nothing with like, it can have words, but they can be foreign, like, so I don't process them.
Or Bjork.
Or Bjork.
And just a schedule, someone to actually go get in that room and start writing. And just various ways to break that up, whether it's a proper microphone to use my dictation software with, or notebooks and someone to transcribe them if I need to change my hand to a different thing. Or better yet, just a miracle cure for RSI.
Oh,
yeah, or a machine that gets your ideas straight out of your brain and onto the paper.
Yeah.
I'd love one of those.
That would be excellent.
That's
because I would have so many books written by now.
Oh yes,
like two a week.
Well, they do have a machine that takes the ideas out of your brain and puts them onto paper. It's called writing.
Yes.
just takes a long time. We're working on that.
Okay? It's so buggy, though.
I know.
And then you have perfect. To do it several times.
You have to look up your own words and put them into your own order, but,
Yes.
But just something that's comfortable and safe and that has an endless supply of Coke.
Yes.
Mm. I'm not a coffee drinker, unlike some people.
I don't know why everyone's looking at me.
Because you're the coffee drinker in this room.
Just Coke, sometimes orange juice, lemonade, and chocolate. And I have a little box of, not lifesavers, barley sugars, the coloured ones.
Barley sugars. Just to keep the blood pressure.
I was going to get lollipops, but they were too expensive for the amount that you actually got in the bag.
That's
plus strange. Sticks.
Plus sticks, yeah. Barley sugars, no sticks. Alright, well, when you finish with Nano, then, immediate strategy is, of course, to run around, jump around, go hooray, download that little certificate from the website and feel all happy. If you finish, then what steps do we recommend taking, like, kind of immediately after, rest, go dive right into editing, bragging, contact your agent immediately.
Agent?
What are the recommended
We're
steps
available
then?
If you want to.
What would you say?
Finish. That's what I would say. Because you can get a lot of momentum going over the course of NaNoWriMo, and it's a huge, huge temptation, one that I succumbed to myself, to stop after you hit your 50,000 or your 60,000 or you finish your, whatever happens at the end of that month. It's very tempting to say, right, that's it. That's my writing done for the year. But with the one that I actually finished, with the project that I finished, the 102,000 word one, I got up to 60,000 in NaNoWriMo, and I think I wrote a grand total of 10,000 in the next month. And I had to really push myself in January to get the damn thing finished, which was worth it. But I would say celebrate like hell if you get it done. Go to the after parties, go drinking, tell everyone, holy fuck, I finished my NaNoWriMo. But don't stop writing then just because you've hit some arbitrary word count. Finish the book. Because there is no feeling in the world quite like, typing, getting the last word, hitting enter three times, then typing the end in all caps.
The end.
Oh, that was
so good.
Yes.
Sarah, what would you say is the best way to finish off Nano?
As somebody who does finish the first draft during Nano, that's my challenge, and if I don't do that, I don't feel like I've won.
Mm-hmm.
My advice is basically the opposite of Woody's advice, which is to take a break. Because jumping straight into editing, your mind's still going to be fuzzy with all your ideas. You need to take it. I usually say about take a week off, hang out with people, try and get your novel out of your head, and then work on something new.
If I may, Lord, no, don't start editing immediately.
Oh, yeah. No, I know, but I mean, like, take a break is the opposite of keep on going, is what I mean, yeah. Yeah, so usually December for me is, if I finish during Nano, is take a week off where I just hang out and try and socialise and be a real person, and then start planning something new, just coming up with a few ideas, brainstorming, getting another novel in my head so I'm not weighing everything on the one novel. Like, no, you're my novel. If I don't publish you, I am doomed to be, a struggling, aspiring author forever. Mm. So coming up with a new idea so that I don't put a lot of pressure on one novel is great, and then I start the proper editing process during January.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
For me, the post-Nano thing is just a physical break, because I'm usually in a lot of pain by the end of Nano. That's one of the reasons why I don't finish, and why I'm not pretty sure I'm not going to be winning again this year. I also have a bunch of other reasons, which if we get time to, we can go into. But generally, I take a physical break, and I read again.
Mm-hmm.
Because the time I would normally have set aside for reading has to be taken up with to try and get that extra 500 words out, because that 2 hours in the evening or whatever. I am not the fastest writer. I think a lot about what words come out, and I have to go through with breaks and pain, and which is one of the reasons why I have dictation software and have to change it up to handwriting and everything. But after that, thing I do is I hand it over to my beta. She just reads it and goes, okay, this is crap, this is good, this is stuff you need to think about it, this character is awesome, I love him, I want to marry him, can he be played by Tom Hiddleston, please? Or various actor of the moment.
The moment. Mm-hmm.
Currently, said a character is Tom Hiddleston.
Because why not?
Because he can do the English dorky thing.
Adorable.
So be over in, you know, electronic files and also just photographs of what I've handwritten. She is a wonderful person and I love her, because I will just send her photographs through Dropbox and she will type them all up. Mm-hmm. So she is the most wonderful person and deserves all the praise and all the cookies.
Oh, good beta readers are good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sharing.
Mine.
She knows how my brain works, so she probably wouldn't work as well for other people. Oh, but sometimes you just have to sit back and relax. Mm-hmm. You've done it, or you haven't done it, and that's fine as well. Don't beat yourself up about it. Go back to reading. Go back to enjoying the actual writing of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you've got the extra time, you can drop down to 1,000 or whatever is best for you. Because
mm-hmm.
not many people... There are people who cannot stand that 1,667 words a day. I know there are some people who can... You know, I've got friends of mine who are like, okay, I've reached day 5, I only have 20,000 words, and I just want to hate them forever. Some people can do that. Some people cannot. I am not. It's like three sins. Someone said slow.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, Sally, we should have her on.
Yeah.
The three sins.
My writing sin is I am slow.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that means my writing is not as crap as it could be,
and that you're not an asshole. Those are the three. Yes.
Yeah,
the
I'm
three
not.
Sins are working.
Hopefully, I'm not a bad writer, and hopefully, I'm not a gigantic jerkhole.
We can explain that quickly. That's not an in joke. That is in fact something we learned from a friend, Sally McLennan, who she's expressed interest in being on the podcast. So she did the. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
She is successful.
She is successful. She's lovely, and she discussed. She had a brief discussion at Au Contraire of the three sins of working authors, as we just kind of briefly outlined. The you can basically get away with practicing like maybe one at most. No one gets away with practicing two. So basically, the three sins were be slow, be not very good at all, and be a complete jerk off. So if you're a slow writer but you're nice and you generally and your writing's quite good, you can get away with it. If you're a jerk, but you produce good work on a regular basis, you know, that's forgivable.
And if you
you're
Nicholas Sparks it.
Nicholas Sparks
or,
it.
Or whatever Patterson is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. All those.
If you're fast and polite, then you can pretty much get away with your writing being pretty much crap.
If you can work on spec and get a lot out.
So the main thing is, during NaNoWriMo, be very nice.
Be nice.
Because
that's
you
why,
are writing quickly.
That's why there are only, there are also only two authors that I will ever talk shit about.
Yes.
And they would be Orson Scott Card, who I have talked shit about on my blog.
I think a lot of people will talk.
Yeah,
I think we
call
it our turn.
And the second one being E.L. James.
Yes.
Author of 50 Shades of Grey.
I don't think she would be that upset, considering her bathtub's full of money.
Yeah.
She can just Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
She's going to have to wipe her eyes now. She's going to have a $100 bill.
Oh, it's the same with both of them, but it's just like, personally, I won't talk shit about other authors because I don't want to, you know, burn any bridges, and also I don't want to judge anyone without knowing them. The only people who will openly say things that I think are disgusting are those two.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a few more you just haven't heard.
They're just the most prominent
circles yet.
Choose your enemies wisely.
So anyway, that was my sin, the slowdown. But there is obviously very valid reasons. My other non-valid reasons are I get distracted easily.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I have to keep working on. That picking it up after I take my physical break. Especially since it's right after that, my birthday and Christmas, and everything goes on in December.
Oh, yes.
That's the really hard thing, and why you really can't continue into December.
Mm. Although the nice thing about NaNoWriMo being in November in the Southern Hemisphere, see, of course, it was founded in the Northern Hemisphere, which, you know, I know where I lived, like back in like upstate New York, the weather just, that's when it starts to get shit. It just gets all gray and rainy, and you just want to stay indoors and just type constantly. But here, though, like the weather's actually getting quite nice, so you can, while you're working on it, you can sit outside with your laptop or whatever and your tablet and just type away under a tree. And I was also proposing when I ran to Woody the other day, I was like, you know, weather permitting, because it is still Wellington, that maybe we could have a post NaNoWriMo like picnic or something, maybe in the Botanic Gardens. Nice idea to throw around.
The other downside is exams. Lots of people have exams.
There's that too. I think most of those are ending.
Even if they take a week out of Nano, it's still pretty hard. So you have to rebel it some way.
Right.
Actually, basically, if I may, one thing on the subject of beta readers finding characters interesting, this is one of the things that NaNoWriMo really does let you do. You can get enough of a finished work together that people can actually start seeing what works. That's one of the main benefits of the thing. You can actually find that people really do like this old guy who talks in the third person all the time, or you know, this cat who thinks he's a dog. You know,
the weird beta reader, or just whoever else reads it and goes, so, I'm already starting writing fan fiction for your thing. I want these two to get together. Can they get together?
Oh, that's right. I promised, previously that I would write a fanfic for anyone's Nano, like, characters if they wanted them to.
If you don't get these two characters together, I will.
I will.
Terrifying beta readers. Anyway.
On the subject of, so when you have the manuscript, then, Who gets it in their head that they should try to get it published?
Oh,
I mean, Sarah, a lot of people think just kind of put it off and say, hey, I did it, yay. I mean, what percentage do you think of people who participate in NaNoWriMo actually go on to try to publish it?
Traditional or self?
Because self, oh, these, yes. previous decades, previous generations, I think that probably you'd get, one or two that actually get published, but these days, I think that quite a few people are actually getting their self-published and Kindled and all those other words. Kids these days.
Because The Night Circus was a Nano book.
Yes, as was
that was traditionally published.
As was A Water for Elephants was also a Nano book.
Because the writer for The Night Circus, she was tweeting about how she's nanoing again. So there are people for whom this works.
Apparently Wool by Hugh Howey was as well. That was self-published, that one.
Yeah. But that's a collection of novellas, or novels, isn't it?
Not sure I haven't read it.
Yeah, it's not my genre, so it's outside of that. But there will be some that will go self-publishing and be successful because they like the control, or it's not something that traditional publishers are wanting.
And because self-publishing works these days.
It does. Anything works if you've got a good product. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good product, you're not going to get it traditionally published, and it's going to flop with self-publishing.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is, please, for the love of God, edit before you publish.
Yes. Edit before you publish and edit before you query. Agents do not want their slush inboxes filled with nano projects on the 1st of December, and inevitably they will get a few.
Yes. So edit for the love of God.
This is a first draft, not the final draft, unless, you know, you are doing
that. That is a power and a curse.
Yeah, with great power comes great responsibility.
And
with 50,000 words.
And now it's a marvel.
Yeah, with 50,000 words comes editing those 50,000 words.
Yes. Yeah. It's a beast.
Yeah. I'll want to, finish a project and get it querying, which terrifies me so much. Oh my god.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
This is why said beta reader is also in charge of reading the rejections. She is wonderful. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm definitely working on a project, not the original Nano idea, that I am aiming to finish and edit and
send out. I'm planning to send out this version. Like I said, I'm on the third draft of my high fantasy novel set in an unusual setting, but
why do you sound so glum?
Sing it with me. But I feel like this time I've actually got it to the point where it's paced properly, and I think
pacing. Yeah,
we were going to talk about pacing a little bit.
Oh yeah, pacing. Nice... We can talk pacing.
I'm better at writing about pacing, actually, than I am talking about it.
Would you like to plug your blog quickly here?
Yes, there?
Plug your blog.
Writingkills.me. I haven't written that much about writing recently. I'm trying to make it personal as well, so that, you know, people realize I'm a person, not just a word machine. And
obsessed with murder.
Obsessed with murder. So there's some, like, clothing reviews, makeup reviews, talking about writing, and... books and stuff, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So you're really good at pacing, huh? That's your strength?
It wasn't. My first nano, my pacing was the worst thing in the world. It was the thing I had the most trouble with. Mm-hmm. It was really awful. I read over the book and I was like, this is paced wrong. I know the pacing is wrong. It was too fast. Everything was just happening and then something else was happening and there was no...
downtime.
There was no downtime and...
No build up,
no tension, you know, everything like that. So
running at the top of the hill.
Yeah, so what I did is I read a few books with really good pacing. I wrote out passages from them. I wrote out the passages as I would write them in my own words and compared them to stuff I'd written myself. And then I worked out what worked, what didn't work from each thing. And that's how I developed my writing style now. Mm. And now I have really strong pacing.
Okay, so that's the weakness you've overcome.
Yeah. This year it's dialogue.
Yay. Yes, because my weakness is description. Like, I'll go back and read my novel and be like, wow, all you know about these characters is old white guy, young white girl, middle-aged Pacifica woman. And it's like, how tall are these people? There's like no description because that's not my strength. Mm-hmm. So, which is probably one of the reasons why I do struggle with nano, because I'm getting on to the next bit rather than stopping to smell the roses.
Description can give you a good word count.
And description can help with pacing as well. That's one of the things I found, was adding description between dialogue would slow a scene down when it needed to, and that would give it more tension.
Yes, so that's one of the things I'm still trying to work through. Any advice?
On the subject of kind of fixing a NaNoWriMo when you don't feel happy with it at the moment, one of the big kind of taboo things as far as the forums are concerned is editing while you're writing nano. If you so much as mention the word editing on the forums, they will yell at you to save it till after the project's finished and various other things. But I've actually found that if you're kind of writing with an awareness of what you're writing, you can actually do quite a bit of editing on the fly and still keep your word count up. You don't need to feel like editing has to be removal or has to be fixing. One of the big things you can do with editing is expand. You can take, you know, because every now and again you'll hit a point where it's like, okay, so the characters walk into this room, say three things, and then walk out. This doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like I haven't given enough sense of time. I haven't given enough sense of place. I'm going to go back in there and I'm going to write an extra three paragraphs and two conversations. It's, you know.
I've been doing the same thing. I haven't been editing my writing style because I know I can fix my prose. I know that, yeah, I'm writing too many adverbs and I'm telling instead of showing, but I can fix that. I know that stuff that I can fix. But when I've realized that I've written the wrong character into a scene earlier, I have gone back and fixed it because it's something that's going to be fixed anyway and I might not remember in the future. Also, it's gonna improve my word count. It's gonna expand on things. It's not as bad as people say it is. Mm-hmm.
The other big one is every now and again you can find yourself writing a scene that's going off the rails. I'm sure that you all felt that. I can't be the only one, can I?
You're not alone.
But I found that the best thing to do is if you find that your scene is going off the rails and you kind of think through it in your head and you realize, okay, I'm gonna need to go into a scene that I really don't want to write to explain what the hell's going on right now, and that's gonna be just select what you've written, hit the backspace key, write what you wanted to write.
There we go.
Or save it.
If you're not going to enjoy what you're writing, then there's no point writing it, nano or not.
That is exactly the problem I have hit with this nano. I got to 10,000 words. Yeah, look at me, I'm a day ahead, it's awesome. And then I just looked at it, I'm like, wow, this is one, absolute rubbish, and two, because I got to the next day, I'm like, what do? I just wanted to go back to the novel I was working on before Nano, because I kept getting ideas for that, and like building on that, and I'm like, you know what? I've reached my word count for today. I will go do a bit on that thing, see if that helps reboot my thing. Well, all it did was realize that, yes, I hated this other project. It needed a lot more prep work. I needed to be in a whole different zone. I really needed to work out a whole lot of things. It was different on a macro scale than what I normally write. Mm. It was a good experiment, and now I know that the experiment didn't work and that I need to go readjust my variables. But in the meantime, I'm going to go back and keep working, not on the original thing, but on the project I like. Sorry for the ramble there. Mm. And just get used to writing a lot.
Mm. Mm.
Keeping in mind things like my lack of description. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still don't know what my several characters look like, but there's at least some features in there.
They have noses.
Yeah, they have noses. This guy is always wearing tweed.
Why all the tweed?
Well, maybe not tweed, but...
A couple of small details can tell you everything you need to know.
Exactly. You know, describing a dead... memory of seeing a dead body and feeling like an empty sock. And now that she's actually... The spirit is glowing with life. You know, the differences in the colour and the texture and the sounds of the bedroom. You know, she can't sleep because it's too quiet because she's growing up living with another person in the room.
One of the best...
The changes in the birdsong.
One of the best cases I've seen for how little description you can get away with of a main character in a novel, not counting ones where they just literally don't describe a damn thing, like Fight Club, is American Gods. And I bring this one up all the time because there are two points in the entire novel where the main character Shadow is described.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
The first one is that he is big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that he is don't fuck with me. That is literally all we get.
There's a few other hints.
Hints here and there, but they almost always boil...
It's not an actual description, it's more like...
They boil right back down to big or don't fuck with me.
Mm. Yes, and they're all relating to other characters. Mm.
But you can see gradually how he kind of moves in the world and how he interacts with things, and you get a real good picture in your head of completely different characters. Like, a lot of people see Shadow as black. I see him as being kind of a bald biker character, but, you know, like, there's a bunch... You can kind of put your own picture in there, and it's perfectly fine that the audience can read your story and see someone else.
That's what stories are. A lot of authors get hung up on trying to make sure that their audience is seeing the same thing that they intended when they were writing.
Right.
Whereas instead, we should be intending for the audience to be able to create their own world out of what we've written. And I think that that's a harder thing to do, but it's a lot more rewarding, because the books that we remember the most are the books that we felt the most about and the ones we saw going on in our head.
Right.
An author didn't put those images into our heads. Mm. We did that ourselves from their words.
Yes, that's what I need to actually try and get to, even that level. That's how little description of characters I end up putting in, because I'm getting straight into the actual stuff that's happening. I'm more action-driven than the stop and smell the roses.
Mm.
So, you know, even the description of, oh, crap, I've gotten so far, I haven't even described that he has curly hair. That's the stuff I need to go back in and add, because it's like, wow, we've had him for about 15,000 words and we don't know that he has hair.
Curly hair is one thing, but...
It's a
you can kind of
it's she's looking at him and seeing her own images in her father, so that's why they need to have some sort of look.
There we go. But right. Like in my story, my main character has one eye.
You kind of have
to drop that in real quick, otherwise, you know, it's going to be a real shock to kind of have to rewrite the character in your brain.
That is a good point. Any other thoughts then about the whole experience of writing for Nano then? Or just writing in general?
I think one of the most fun things to do, if you're having trouble with Nano, one fun thing to do is switch up your writing style.
Mm-hmm.
In one of my stories, in one of my NaNoWriMo ones, I found a character that I just loved writing from their perspective, which is a real shame because he was only in one scene. But he was this really old guy called Amadeus Poe.
I like that name.
And everyone loves that name. And
great name.
He saw the world only in third person, and he only ever had indirect speech. He talked to people indirectly, and he heard them indirectly. People were talking about things. There was no dialogue in any sequence that was written from his perspective, because he didn't actually listen. He just kind of... His brain worked so that he kind of got the gist of what they were saying, and he kind of continually harped on about people not talking simply enough. Why can't they just say what they mean? And he was kind of lost in his own head, and it was just this wonderful experience of a completely different style of how to set the scene. And I would highly recommend jumping into some weird character's head if you are having trouble getting the word count out, because your brain will love you for it.
One thing that you and I have talked a lot about in the past is planning versus pantsing.
What? Planning versus pantsing?
Yeah.
Fly by the seat of your pants.
Oh, okay.
Spend 3 months getting the novel all scened out, or you sit down, day one, who's the main character? They have hair.
Which the actress wouldn't even know about.
Yeah, spending, 3 weeks going, oh gosh, how do I, describe a character when, in a made-up world, when before I would have just said she was Japanese. Because there is no Japan as reference.
Mm.
Yeah.
That was one thing that I really had to try and do, because I had to describe her and her giant robot. And I'm like, how do I describe giant robot? Also girl.
But anyway, planning versus pantsing.
Yeah, well, I mean, previously I've always pantsed my novels. I have always...
Pantsing. I'm putting that down as a keyword.
Right there at the water fountain. Right there in front of everybody. Blushing like a beetroot.
I've always... there's in the nano room at the library for the writers, there's a quote by Robert Frost on the wall, which is, no tears in the reader, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader, no surprise in the writer, no surprise in the reader, which is what I always lived by in the past. I would always try and surprise myself with, who's the killer in the end? Now, that was a great way of enjoying writing. However, the plot holes, my God, the plot holes.
Bloody plot. Always making us, it's assuming it makes sense.
So this year, for my novel, I planned my antagonist storyline, because when you're writing a mystery novel especially, it's so easy to make your protagonist do things just because it seems cool, as opposed to having them acting in a logical way based on what the antagonist is doing. And a mystery novel or any sort of thriller is really run by the antagonist. It is a reactive book until about the midpoint, when the protagonist can take over, I think. So I did that first this year. And I did a lot of planning, most of which is thrown out. I don't think I needed to do that level of planning. It's not my favorite thing to do. Then I wrote down a skeleton of what was going on, what had to happen in each scene, using Blake Snyder's Save the Cat techniques, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was basically, inciting incident, catalyst, promise of the premise, all that sort of stuff.
One of the big old grand kind of schematics for writing out a novel.
And I worked out what had to happen in each of these scenes, and I'm not letting myself deviate on tangents this year, which is really good. I'm not putting in any subplots, which a mystery novel needs subplots, because that's where you have your clues and your red herrings. I'm adding all my red herrings and my clues in revision. And I think that this will go well. It's certainly a lot easier to write, and I'm not losing plot threads the way I used to. That's so good. You may have been slightly right on that, Woody. Just a little bit.
You might have been right.
Maybe just a little bit.
Maybe just a little bit. I think it's also genre-dependent as well as writer-dependent.
Mm. Yes. I think slice-of-life stuff probably would do better with kind of an unplanned, but bunch of strong characters, put them into a room together, see what happens.
Yeah.
High fantasy, mystery, other ones where the bad guy is a big figure in the story.
Yeah.
You kind of need to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Or at least... This was another conversation we had, the reactive versus the active antagonist. We were chatting about a lot of novels go for the active antagonist, reactive protagonist. That's the model that's used by Aragorn uses it. It's very much a case of the bad guy throws things at the protagonist, and the protagonist has to react to them.
Yeah.
The other option is the active protagonist, reactive antagonist, which is the antagonist kind of has everything set up the way they like, and the protagonist sets about breaking it in some major way. I think that's what Discworld plots kind of tend to use. That's at least what the Moist von Lippwick stories almost always use. They kind of have a protagonist who's trying to fix things, and the antagonist who suddenly realizes that the setup they've been using is no longer going to work, and they're going to have to fight back in some way. And so,
I think either can be done well, but when your protagonist is reacting to everything, that's when a antagonist who's rational is very important, because one who's just like, oh, I'm going to throw this challenge up in your path for no apparent reason, is one of the worst things you can read. It takes you completely out of the story. And how many times have you just gone, well, why are they doing that? Why are they, like, standing there? You know, it's even just the monologuing villain. Why are you standing there talking when you could just be running away? Just shoot them. Your antagonist has to make sense when your protagonist reacts to them.
A reactive antagonist, on the other hand, can be an idiot.
Yes.
Can be a complete idiot who was handed what they had at the beginning. And in some ways, a reactive antagonist is almost going to be more understandable than an active antagonist in a lot of ways, because, holy shit, my grand scheme is not going to work because of this guy, because of these meddling kids, and that goddamn talking dog.
Leaving crying.
I have to scare them away, I have to use these traps, I have to, and none of it's going to work, of course, because I don't know how anything works, because my dad set all this up, or whatever.
I'm a dude in a sea monster costume. That is as far as my planning went.
I've at this point gone completely insane from all my magic, and I can't actually see the world the way other people can. Everyone just has candles behind their eyes, and I need to snuff them out. You know, that sort of thing.
I'm myself in a place. I want to stay here. I'm just staying here. You can't take this away from me. So I will just struggle and claw.
Yeah.
I feel like that's possibly a little easier to write antagonists like that for you guys who write fantasy novels than a mystery novel with a serial killer who's reactive isn't really going to be.
That's going to be much more of a slasher than a serial killer.
And I am. My novel is a murder mystery come slasher, as I'm putting it. But it does, the slasher part turns up when the protagonists turn everything on their head and the antagonist has to become reactive.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like that to change around the midpoint.
Sometimes that happens as well. You have a reactive protagonist who's like, the other way around.
Yeah.
Because the situation has changed.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
one of the last...
Harry Potter has lived too long.
Yeah.
One of the classic last moments before the climax is the swapping of the reactive-active role.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, the Dark Lord gets up off his throne, and takes up his sword, which he hasn't taken up in years, or the protagonist who has been fighting all this time suddenly kind of has to stop and has to wait for something else to happen, or the character who was driving the plot suddenly has to drop back, and the other character has. But the main thing is, if a character swaps roles, the other character has to swap with them. Unless they both become reactive, in which case you can get this kind of hilarious kind of bouncing off each other until up until the climax thing, which
depending on the work may or may not work.
Can work, but a good rule of thumb is if one of them is doing something, like doing something that they would do if the other one wasn't there, the other one should be kind of reacting.
We've crossed the hour mark now, then, so if anyone has any final thoughts on writing or Nano, or wants to just briefly mention books they've read either while writing or after having given up on writing this month.
I'm still writing.
You are still writing.
I just have to reduce it because of RSI.
Right, okay.
My final thoughts are, don't cheat badly. There's a lot of tips for cheating in NaNoWriMo. Yes. There's a lot of, like go onto Wikipedia, figure out how you actually make leather, then copy that out. Don't do that. There's so many better ways to cheat.
Like actually getting words out.
Add more description to a place. Yes. Go back to chapter one where you introduced Ravenholm, the ancient castle, and talk about its history. You know, there's so many more
ways. Add a character who refuses to use contractions. Throw them in a lot of scenes.
Yeah, put...
Or just refuse to use contractions.
Put in more conversations between characters. Yeah. There's so many good ways to cheat that can give you more ideas.
Yeah.
Don't cheat the bad ways, yeah. Like writing out the entire lyrics of a song that your characters are listening to
yeah.
or something.
Yeah. You know, character doesn't understand. Ask them... Have them ask someone to explain what is happening. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes there is going to be the guy who's like, what is going on? And you might need to actually boil it out for them.
Yeah, and I also think over-explaining your novel to yourself, while it seems a little redundant when you're writing it, when you read over it, you can be like, oh, good, that's what I meant.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, is that what I actually told that right. character? Why did he do that later
yeah.
on?
Yeah.
He had no idea that this thing was... You know, actually going to come... He didn't know this was the main character's birthday. Why did he have a present?
Just because you know something doesn't mean the characters know something or even the readers will get it.
Yeah.
You know, it may seem blindingly obvious, but sometimes you need to say, he didn't order this because he's allergic to peanuts.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was another...
You can't just foreshadow his peanut allergy.
Yeah, you say, no, I can't have peanuts.
Yeah, but not very subtly. Not subtly, no.
It's just like, want peanut butter on your toast? No, I can't have peanuts.
Damn it, I had something and it's gone.
Not sure.
It was about, it's gone. It's completely gone.
It's gone.
Vacated my brain.
Bye-bye. Oh, well. We've reached pretty much the last hour, so...
Yeah.
That's it's been a pretty good discussion, though. We've definitely gotten out, like, all the thoughts, all the ideas, or most of them, about, like, yeah, about writing and getting to that word count and getting through, get out, get through, survive. what's the slogan? I'm trying to repeat it.
That was it, get out, get through.
There is a few variants of it, depending on the natural disaster.
On the natural disaster.
Yes. House fire, you know, get down, get low, get out.
What should the NaNoWriMo disaster slogan be?
Don't contract.
Don't cheat badly.
Cheat well.
Cheat
yes.
well.
Smart.
Yeah.
Cheat smart. Stay alive. All right.
Stay.
Write smart.
Well,
not hard.
Sane.
Write
sane
smart,
is the wrong word.
Sane. Yeah. Write smart, not hard.
Write smart and hard.
Write smart and
write hard.
But not so hard here.
Write hard.
Write hard with a vengeance.
All right.
Real write hard.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry,
all right.
Sounds like a good place to end it.
So that's the end of our third ever episode of Inkslingers. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be coming back next month with that'll be the same month that Desolation of Smaug comes out, so we'll probably have some of the Tolkien nerds on to discuss that.
I'd better stay out there.
We'll stay out of that.
We'll probably get some people on to talk about how NaNoWriMo went.
How NaNoWriMo went end up going for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
You've been listening to Wellington Inkslingers. Our theme music is Metricity by Declan Doherty Ramsey. You can find us on Twitter at InkslingersWGTN and on Tumblr at Wellington Writers. Thanks for listening.